Hello. I am recording an audio for the Common Ground mini series. This is my second sharing based on the Ellie Ruzdar audio from last May. Last week we ended at the 18-minute, 54-second point in that audio interview, so that's where I'm going to begin today. I did hear from a few of you who said it was a little bit difficult to hear, maybe even impossible to hear, the Ellie Ruzdar audio, and yet you still thought the series was very, very valuable. So since the audio is prompting me, I'm just going to continue as I was, and if you're able to hear it, that's great. But if you aren't, then maybe it just gives you a bit of time to contemplate what I just said. But since the few who talked to me also thought this series is very valuable, I'm just going to continue. So as a bit of a review, last week where we left off, basically what we had seen is that ignorance is ignoring the self. Being focused outward on the world. And so the way to reverse ignorance is to reverse what we're ignoring. Instead of ignoring the world, instead of ignoring the self in favor of the world, we'll begin to ignore the world in meditation. Ignore the world and focus our full attention on the self. We also saw the recommendation that the seeking mind is, of course, what seeks outward. But what we're going to do is take that seeking and reverse it, and we're going to seek inward until the seeking mind collapses. And when the seeking mind collapses, that's when seeking ends. So the trick is kind of to turn the seeking around, instead of seeking outward, to seek inward. And then Ellie was starting to talk about three requirements for an earnest devotee. The first one was that desire for truth has to be authentic, and that we must want truth for truth's sake. We aren't trying to get anything from the truth for me. The second is that the mind needs to be mature and capable to recognize the truth, instead of accepting instead of believing that something else, right, some big bang, you know, and the truth itself is too ordinary or too boring, right? Instead of that, the mature mind is ready to accept the truth and say, yes, I see, that is the truth, and I want it because it is the truth, and it was the truth that I was seeking, right? It's not an experience seeker, it's a truth seeker. So with that bit of a review, I'm just going to start playing the recording again, and we shall see where this goes. So here we go, starting at 18 minutes and 54 seconds.
And that's how this mind is going to be luminous with this light. Because it would surrender. It would see itself as this. And it would dissolve. Easy. It doesn't need challenge. It's not going to be... I recognize that there is some awareness here. But 1 minute I'm aware, the next minute I am somewhere else. That is not aware. That's not awakening. You don't know. If I bring a 5-year-old child sitting in front of me and just bring their attention to the awareness, they would recognize that. That doesn't mean awakening is happening here. Awakening happens when you recognize yourself as that, as the ultimate. Without any doubt, and claim it. And that's how awakening is.
All right, so what she's saying now is that just because you have reached the point where you can be aware of awareness, she says that is not awakening, that there are people who certainly have reached the point where they can be aware of awareness. And sometimes the way they express it is, you know, I get it and then I lose it, right? You know, I mean, I get it, I know what awareness is, and then I lose it again. She says that's not awakening. That is not awakening. I don't think she's saying that there's anything wrong with that phase. I think that we probably all go through that phase where we are becoming aware of awareness, and then we get caught up in thoughts again and we lose it, right? And in fact, that's the purpose of spiritual practice, is to sit down, close our eyes, become aware of awareness, and stay there as long as we can. But even in meditation, we will catch ourselves going back into thought. And then we practice self-inquiry, or we use whatever means we use to bring the attention back to awareness again. So this in and out is kind of a natural to the devotee who is not awake and wants to become awake. But that is not awakening. She's saying just because you know what awareness is does not mean that you are awake. Awakeness is when you claim it, you see that it's you, and it's like a final decision. Right? It's a final decision. So there's no more in and out. I had it and then I lost it.
And it's a knowledge, it's not an experience. It's just all of a sudden this shield, this veil of ignorance drops. Drops completely. And you would recognize what was always here. Something that always was here. It never was coming and going. So this space of emptiness is not really empty. It is full. It's full of life. And that is what I am. Without any doubt. Now, the third thing that it's needed here. Now, if you have the first two qualifications.
All right, so we have the first two requirements of the earnest devotee. One is the desire for truth to be authentic. The second is that the mind is mature and capable to recognize the truth. And she's saying, and claim it. That's who I am. And she says, this is not an experience, it's a knowledge. Because we mistake ourselves for the body-mind. When we take ourselves, when we claim it, and we take ourselves to be the awareness, that is a knowledge change. Now I know who I am. I was mistaken before. Now I know who I am. So it's not an experience. It's a knowledge. And the mature mind is ready to make that decision. So now we'll listen and find out what the third requirement is for an earnest devotee.
Then a clear mind is needed. A clear mind happens when you do meditate. That's why I encourage meditation a lot. Because if you don't have that clarity, if there is always chattering here, you'll not be able to see what is here. So therefore, if you have these qualifications, you go ahead and do meditation. And that meditation is not going to happen as a chore.
Yes.
It happens naturally. That's what happened to me. I had no guru, I have no teacher, I have nobody around me to teach me that. I knew naturally that in order to find who I am, I have to close the eyes. And I have to go and see what is here. I knew with open eyes I cannot do it, because in open eyes it is always duality. I see myself as this body and I see Regina as that. So there's a duality here. In the midst of this duality, it was difficult to see. Once you wake up, the duality part can be seen and the truth is be seen. So you don't mind whether your eyes are open or closed. But in the past, your eyes need to be closed.
All right. So what she is saying, the third requirement is a clear mind, which is a mind that is free of all of that chatter, because that chatter, of course, blocks the true self. And she says that the way to get the clear mind is through meditation. And she is recommending closing the eyes during meditation, even though we have seen her teaching open-eyed meditation. Even in that open-eyed meditation video, she said that's for beginners, right? So that's just to help us become aware of what awareness is, that open-eyed method that she teaches. But she says that really, in order to truly seek within, the eyes need to be closed, because whenever the eyes are open, there's a reminder of duality. You know, there's me and the seen. And so when you close the eyes, that reminder of duality is taken away, and you can focus within in a different way. without the distraction of duality.
So that you can be able to see. So in other words, the mind has to get into this state of clarity and quietness. And it's just like a lake. If this lake is so wavy and so much mud and muddy and all that, you can't see what is in there. But when the mud settles, when the lake is quiet, you can see all of a sudden something.
All right, so she's comparing it to a lake. When a lake is, you know, when there's been a storm and the lake is all windy and there's lots of waves on the lake and the lake is all muddy, you can't see in the lake. You can't see what's there. But when the lake settles, it's quiet, and the mud settles to the bottom and the lake is clear, then you can see. And so the purpose of meditation is to become the clear, still lake of the mind, so that we can see what's there, what's within.
Same as here. But if you're not qualified, you don't have the first two qualifications, and then all of a sudden you just sit down and try to meditate for 30 years, concentrating on your breath for 30 years, it's not
going to
work.
All right, she's saying that these first two qualifications of an earnest devotee, the desire for truth and the mind that is capable to recognize it, that's the requirement. Meditation by itself isn't enough. That if you do not have the desire for truth for truth's sake, or you do not have a mind that is ready to say, I see, that's the truth, and accepting it purely on that basis, she says meditation will not help. So the first two requirements need to be fulfilled first, and then you are ready to meditate.
What is concentrating of the breath has to do with my knowledge? Nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm asking the question for some of you, oh, because I know some of these gurus, they say, oh, who's doing meditation? Meditation means you're separated. No, I don't think so. The way Rumi says, it takes a storm to remove a storm. So that meditation, I am doing meditation, is a storm. That means the ego is doing. But it would remove the storm. It's going to remove the ignorance.
All right, so she is talking about how Rumi said, and of course many teachers have said, it takes a thorn to remove a thorn. And it's true, she says, that it is the ego that meditates, but that is the thorn that actually removes the ego. Right? So the meditation is important. Also, what occurred to me is, again, she had said earlier that these first two requirements are required first, right? That we have a desire for the truth that is authentic, and that we have a mind that is ready to recognize the truth. And it occurred to me that A Course in Miracles is one method of preparing ourselves in that way. It's a preparation. It's like I talked last week about the Jeep Trail. And I mentioned to you all that I had that vision in March of last year that told me that, you know, basically showed me that the first 12 years of my spiritual path had been traveling along that Jeep Trail, and that I had just now gotten to the trailhead and was ready to hike that mountain. So I think what that really means is I had just now gotten to the point where I have the first two requirements now. Right now I have the desire for truth that's authentic. I want truth for truth's sake. I don't seek anything from it. And I have a mind that is mature enough and capable of recognizing the truth and accepting it on that basis. That's the truth. I accept that. So now that I have these first two requirements, I am ready to start hiking the mountain by meditating. And again, she said if you meditate before you have the first two requirements, it accomplishes nothing. You can meditate for 30 years and it will accomplish nothing. But if you have those first two, then the meditation journey can be fairly short. And I don't know how short. I listened to Alon Jiva earlier this week. He did not tell. He said he did not want to set expectations about how long it will take. But we know he took the same path, that he did not tell how long it took. Michael Langford, if I remember correctly, is saying it took him 2 years. But then he had many, many, many days when he meditated for 12 hours a day. Nisargadatta Maharaj says 3 years, and he did work a full-time job and then meditated in all of his spare time. And then Ellie Ruzdar, I believe, said it took her 5 years, and I think that in one of her interviews, I heard her say that she meditated 3 or 4 hours a day. So maybe it depends, maybe it depends on how much time you spend in the meditation after you have these first two requirements. If you're meditating a couple hours a day, it's going to take longer in years. Or if you're meditating 12 hours a day, it may take a shorter time in years to actually reach the final realization or the final end of the ego. But that's conjecture. All right, let's go back to the audio.
So to me, meditation for me, for my body, for this body and mind, was absolutely positively necessary. And was happening as a very natural way. It's not that some people call me, oh, I meditate 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at night. No, that's a chore. That's a chore. It takes 20 minutes for mind to settle down. So that is not enough. You know, you have to be honest with yourself.
Yeah, she's saying if you meditate like 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at night, you know, that's just not going to do it. She says it takes 20 minutes for the mind to even settle down. This has to come from an inward drive to discover who you are. And you're very, very interested. And so you are taking time to really go within. And I know now that when I am in meditation, I do have to set alarms because I have different reasons that I need to end at a certain time, work reasons. But I know that when I'm in meditation, I want to just stay there till I get the answer, you know. And I remember Buddha in the movie The Little Buddha. Buddha sat down and resolved not to get up until he got the answer. And who knows, maybe someday it will be that strong for me, because I can already feel that urge. So it will just be, I don't want to do anything else. I just want this answer now, right? Like Michael Langford often says, you know, you have to want it as bad as a man being held underwater wants air, right? So maybe that is beginning to build. But I do feel that when I'm in meditation. I'm no longer wondering if the hour is up or the 2 hours is up, depending on the amount of time I have that day. When I'm there, I feel this urge to stay there till I get to the answer. But then the alarm goes off and I leave. And I go on to whatever meeting or responsibility I seem to have related to my work.
Do I really want to meditate? Do I feel like meditating? If you feel like it, you sit down and meditate. Not because this path is telling you. And plus, this meditation and doing it is not for just stress management.
Yeah, she's saying, you know, don't do it just because this path tells you to. Just because I tell you to, I being Ellie, or just because I tell you to, I being Regina, or because Michael Langford says, or Alan Jiva says, or anything else. She said it has to be because you want to do this.
It's for recognition of the truth. For that purpose, you're doing it. You're doing it, and your purpose is, when I close my eyes, my intention is to recognize who am I and what is here. What is the truth in here? If that is the truth, the definition of the truth, I can easily define now. The truth is that which that is always here. It cannot be coming and going. That which is coming and going, it cannot be truth. So I have to recognize what is the truth in here, and who am I. So yes, I would absolutely positively encourage meditation.
All right. So the truth, of course, she says, is it has to be that which is always here. It can't be anything that is coming or going. And then she ended with, so of course I absolutely encourage meditation. but I guess that would be after the first two qualifications are met, maybe. I still think you can do both at once. So if you're listening to Regina, I would say continue to go through the purification phase that is helping you to meet those first two requirements, you know, where you want truth for truth's sake, and you're maturing your mind so that you're able to say, yes, I accept the truth, simply because it's the truth, not for any other reason. Work on those and begin meditating at the same time. I think you can fall in love with meditation. And if you also are aware of the first two requirements and you're working towards the first two requirements, it's all going to come together for you.
And the kind of meditation also we talk about is very simple. It's just close the eyes and just bring the attention that is here in the mind to this witness.
All right. She says the kind of meditation that we are talking about is very simple. Close the eyes. Bring the attention that is here to the witness. Bring the attention to the witness. So we can see that she is recommending what Michael Langford calls, and therefore what we call, awareness, watching, awareness. Close the eyes. Bring the attention that is here to the witness. So we're seeing the same recommendation about awareness, watching, awareness, meditation.
To this witnessing, to this awareness, which is aware of everything, is aware of the body, is aware of the mind, is aware of the emotions. That's all there is. Not controlling the mind, not trying to stop the thoughts, not trying to control the emotions.
Okay, again, she's saying we're not in meditation. We are not trying to control the mind. We are not trying to control the thoughts. We are not trying to control the emotions. And so it would be as Adyashanti teaches in the true meditation, when Adyashanti says that you allow everything to be as it is, very deeply, he says, allow everything to be as it is. But while we're allowing everything to be as it is, our attention is not caught up in it. It's going on, and our attention is watching the witness. Right? So whatever emotions are there, are there. Whatever thoughts are there, are there. But we take the attention and we place the attention on the witness. And that is what we are doing while all of this other stuff in the inner world is happening.
We need to just close the eyes and allow every emotion to arise. And that's how the purification in the body takes place. Because once emotion arises, for example, sometimes you remember some sad story in your life, that sadness arises. And tears, absolutely tears is going to come very naturally.
All right, so what she's talking about now is, you know, of course this is in her case, but she says, you know, tears, you know, like if some sad emotion begins to come up, tears may come. You know, you may sit there crying. And I think that's an important point because, again, that means whatever is happening is happening. There may be a sad memory that comes up. There may be an emotion that comes up with it. There may be crying happening, and we don't interfere with any of that. We just keep our attention with the witness of that. So there's no sense of control there, right? It's just where are we putting our attention? You know, it kind of reminds me of if I'm sitting in the living room with Ron and I am reading a book and he is watching Star Wars or something. You know, I'm aware of the TV being on. I'm aware of the Star Wars happening, but my attention is on the book, right? My attention is on what I'm reading. So our attention is on the watcher, even though we are also simultaneously aware of this sad memory that's arising, the sadness that's arising, the tears that are crying, or maybe it's a fear or something else. One thing that happens to me, it hasn't happened real recently, but it happened to me several times before, and it may happen again. In my lifetime, there have been many places that I've loved. You know, I've loved places I've visited on vacations, and I've loved places that I've lived. You know, I guess I'm a place lover. So what will happen in meditation sometimes is the mind will bring a place back, a place that I haven't been to in a long time, but that I loved very, very much. And when the mind brings it back, in a way that my conscious mind in everyday life couldn't. I mean, it just brings back all of this incredible detail. It's like really being there. It's not like my faded memories typically are. And in fact, what I can do is I can walk in that place. And like when I turn a corner, everything is there as if I was there again. And the first couple of times this happened in meditation, I became so interested in the place because there are places that I love that were being brought back. And I went into them with my attention. I walked around the corner and I really enjoyed the experience of being in the place again. And then I realized that that was taking me away from being aware of the witness. So then when the places started to show up, I would notice that the place was there. I was aware of the fact that the place was there in the mind, but I kept my attention with the witness, kept my awareness with awareness. And then what would happen after, you know, just a minute or so is the place would just kind of fade because I didn't give my attention. I did not enter into it and start walking around. And maybe that's why the places don't show up anymore, because I, you know, there was a few more times at least that they did show up, but I did not give them my attention, right? So things can occur during meditation, but we want to keep in mind where we want our attention. We want to keep our attention with awareness, keep our attention with the witness, and then let everything else to be as it is. You know, we're not trying to get rid of it or anything. We let it be as it is, but our attention stays with the awareness.
You let them come up. Any emotion, anger can arise. What is that emotion? What is that thought can arise? You don't control that. Let them come and go. Let them come and go. You stay as this witness, as this aware existence that is right here and right now. And that makes, and this type of practice would make the mind a little bit tamed. Mind gets familiar a little bit to this space of emptiness. And this mind is not going to be afraid of this space. Because if you've never done meditation, the mind is not used to this. The mind does not accept this space of emptiness as a safe place.
All right. So she says, what's happening during this meditation where you're staying focused, attention focused on the witness, is that the mind is being tamed. She says the mind does not really like this space, this openness of awareness on awareness. And, of course, this would explain why the mind tried to give me these places that I loved from my past that I could go into, right? The mind just wanted me to go into anything. And since it knows that there are places that I love that I haven't been to in many years, it gave me the gift of those places, right? The mind is not comfortable with the space. But as we continue to practice this awareness, watching awareness, she says the mind becomes tamed. It becomes more comfortable with this space. And when we were listening to Alon Jiva, he used the term that the mind will merge into awareness, right? Well, the mind is not going to merge into awareness if it's afraid of it. So we can see that we may need to go through this period of time where we're teaching the mind there's nothing to fear from awareness. And then as we teach the mind there's nothing to fear, the mind becomes more and more ready to take that final leap and merge into awareness permanently. It returns to its source.
So therefore, when time comes to dive in, to merge into the ultimate, it will not gonna do that. Because to the mind, this is not the place to be trusted. It's not trustworthy. It's not safe.
Yeah, and she's saying naturally the mind just will not do this, will not merge into awareness. It needs this training period because its natural instinct is that that place is not safe. And it will do whatever it can to stay away from there. in meditation, you know, we want to be patient because we are training the mind to accept that it can merge with awareness.
So meditation helps the mind to see this space as home, to recognize this space as ultimate finality. So that's why I recommend, highly, highly recommend that the mind, your your mind needs to be changed. But the point is that just doing meditation is not enough. Meditation has to be in conjunction with contemplation at the same time.
All right, she's saying now that just meditation is not enough. That meditation has to be done in conjunction with contemplation. And she does not use contemplation the same way that Regina does. You know, Regina talks about contemplation, contemplating quotes, contemplating A Course in Miracles, right? Contemplating words and getting wisdom, receiving wisdom or clarity. When she says contemplation, she's talking about what I call self-inquiry. True self-inquiry, right? The capital S, self-inquiry. Contemplation is seeking the self. Contemplation is looking again and again to see what I really am. What is my truth? Who am I? So when she says meditation is not enough, she means just sitting and allowing everything to be as it is, and maybe even just being aware of awareness is not enough. There has to be this, I'm going to call it a probing action, where we're going deeper and deeper into awareness by seeking our ultimate truth. So that way we don't sit on just the surface of awareness, right? Saying, oh, here I am. I found awareness. I'll just sit here. And we somehow hang out at the surface. There's a probing that goes deeper and deeper and deeper, and she calls that contemplation. And as I've mentioned, I typically call that self-inquiry.
Contemplation is with the clear mind, with the mature mind, just see what is here. Because I said many times, I remember when I was having an interview with someone, I mentioned something. Very simple. I said, when your mind gets used to this space of emptiness, this space of emptiness is pointing to the truth right here and right now. And your mind has to be able to see it.
All right. Many people, I don't want to go into what other people say because, you know, people use the same words to say different things. So I'm just going to back up from that. I started to say something that many people say, but then I realized that others say it in a different context, and it's true. So so let me just step out of that mud pile. What she is saying is that when the mind is quiet and clear and silent, that silence that we are witnessing is not what we are. We are the witnesser of the silence. But it's just easier to notice us as the witnesser when it is silent. In fact, Nisargadatta Maharaj said a quiet mind is not necessary because the witness is always there. But a quiet mind is helpful because then we're not as distracted. And so when the mind is quiet and we notice it's all quiet and all silent, we can look and say, what sees this quiet? What sees this silence? And we can find ourselves more easily in that emptiness than we can in a very, very crowded environment.
Just this sentence. Somebody called me the next day. Somebody contacted from Australia, a gentleman. I never forget that. He was in his late 70s. He said, I was in this path for 30 years. You said one sentence, and that was it. That was it. He woke up. He said, you said this stillness, this emptiness, this silence is pointing to the truth. And that is so true. If your mind is mature, it will get that. Because this mind was going, was ready, was willing to speak for the truth, had done the meditation, so he was so ready, so ripened, so ready to hear the message. So when you hear the message, you are not deaf. You hear it. You hear what she's talking about. But majority of the people who are sitting in these satsangs, I've seen it. There's a guru is talking, 1,000 people sitting. He keeps talking about it. He keeps pointing to the truth. He keeps talking. Have you seen one person, even one out of thousands, all of a sudden, get up and say, whoa, yes, absolutely positive, yes.
That reminds me of that scene in when Harry Met Sally at the diner, remember? Where she's showing how easily a woman can fake an orgasm. She's going, yes. But what Ellie is talking about is sitting and listening to a guru, even though the guru may be accurately pointing to awareness the entire time, that is, you know, sitting and listening to a guru talk about awareness is not going to work. You know, we need to sit down and do this practice ourselves. I think I heard John Mark Stroud, I think it was him once, who used the term inner astronaut, and I love that term. You know, we need to be the inner astronaut. We each have to do this for ourselves. We need to be the inner astronaut, and we need to go in and make this discovery. Sitting and listening to teachers talk about it, even if they're accurately talking about it and accurately pointing, if we aren't taking the time to go and look within ourselves, it's not going to cut it.
No. You don't see that. Everybody's all sitting in this form of a, you know, worshiping and listening, but not really listening. This ear is deaf. It cannot hear because of the ignorance. Although he's talking about it, he's pointing to the truth constantly. They're not going to hear. So, that. And then this mind, the mind who is mature, a mind who is clear, a mind who is open and clear, is not attached. It's not attached to this play of the dream. It's not taking his action so seriously. He's not seeking for approval.
All right, so right now she is giving you some ways that you can maybe tell if you have that mature mind. You know, if you wanted to kind of look at yourself and ask, am I ripened? Am I ready for this? She says the mind that is ready for this is, well, actually, I'm just going to play that last little part again. Let's listen very carefully and then I'll repeat it.
And then this mind, the mind who is mature, a mind who is clear, a mind who is open and clear, is not attached.
All right, so first way, you are not attached. You are not attached to what is happening in the world. You know, we could say you're not attached to specific outcomes.
It's not attached to this play of the dream. It's not taking his action so seriously.
Don't even take your own action so seriously, you know, even if you make what you might call a mistake. You just see it, but you're not taking yourself so seriously anymore. This is how you know if you have this mature mind.
He's not seeking for approval. He's not seeking for any particular action to get any specific results.
Again, this is not being attached to outcomes, not seeking for any specific action to get a specific result. You know, doing may be happening, right? But you just do because it's natural to do this right now, and there's not an attachment to a specific outcome based on the current doing.
It's not going to be like that. This mind is mature and recognizes something. It would know somehow, it knows this play cannot be it only. It knows that. So if it's not it, then what is the truth? Okay, so with this introduction I gave, I hope people understand it, go deep inside and in the heart and see if that's true. Are you in this category of qualifications that I just mentioned?
Yeah, so she's saying, so go within and see if this is true. Do you have this mature mind? Are you ready now to seek the truth through awareness, watching, awareness, meditation? And again, I think sometimes people feel very discouraged, like, no, I'm not ready. That means I shouldn't do it. And I don't feel that that has to be the response. I feel that if it's obvious that there's the opportunity for additional readiness, that you go ahead and practice some awareness, watching, awareness. Go ahead and start getting the mind used to awareness, watching, awareness. But at the same time, continue to prepare yourself. Like I said, I think you can do both at the same time. I can't find anything in me that says you have to do one and then the other, even though I did it that way.
If that is true only, then pick this path. If you are in this, if really authentic, then this pick this path. Because I have news for you. For someone who is really the truth seeker, absolutely 100% awakening happens.
All right. She says, if you are ready and you really are the genuine truth seeker, then absolutely 100%, once you commit yourself to this, awakening happens. But I think there's going to be a but there. And the but is, if you are not ready, awakening will not happen. You know, so I think, remember I said that you can do both at once. You can continue to prepare yourself and you can practice awareness, watching, awareness. I think that if you want to discern whether you are ready for that, whether you are ready for simultaneously preparing yourself and practicing awareness, watching awareness, the only question that you need to ask yourself is this how I want to spend my life? Is this what I want now? Do I want to spend my life preparing myself for awakening and also practicing awareness, watching awareness, which is the direct means to awakening? Or do I really want to do something else first? I mean, you know, it's up to you. If you want this, if you know that you want this, you want to take these steps to prepare yourself and you want to begin practicing awareness, watching awareness, then do it. And if you don't, you probably couldn't make yourself do it anyway, right? Because it takes time. You know, it takes time to commit yourself. You know, like I think that on an average day, just the practice of the gentle healing group, which I do because I'm going through it with you, so I would call that the preparation. The practice of the gentle healing group plus the meditation that I do because I want to do it takes me at least the first 4 hours of every day. And if you aren't genuinely interested, you won't commit that kind of time. Right? You might want to hurry up and get through the homework in 20 minutes or something like that, but you know, it's not where your genuine interest is. So you can probably tell where your genuine interest is just by watching how you literally want to spend your time. But I would never discourage you from giving any time that you want to give. If right now the truth is you're willing to do what you can do in 20 minutes and then you want to move on, I say go ahead and keep giving those 20 minutes. Those 20 minutes are probably preparing you for the day when you're going to want to give 2 hours to it every day. And, of course, those 2 hours are preparing you for the day when you will want to give 4 hours to it every day. So I would never say quit and walk away. Unless you want to quit and walk away, then, of course, do. I don't want to guilt anybody into you aren't ready, you should just quit. I want you to look within and say, what do I want? What do I want to give to this? And then do that. Just make sure you're coming from yourself.
100%, not 99%. But for someone who is not meant to be a truth seeker, it happens to be the object seeker, and it now wants to come to this path so that it feels better, okay, because such and such guru says that you're going to be free and in, you know, unattached and this and that's looking for that, the chances are very, very, very slim. I'm not going to say impossible, but because nothing can be impossible. Once in a blue moon, something can happen. but there is absolutely no way, if you don't have this authentic desire for the truth and the maturity of the mind and the clarity of the mind, to be able to see and wake up to who you are.
Okay, she is again saying it is not possible. If you do not have this authentic desire for the truth, you do not have the mind that is mature enough or ready enough to accept the truth simply because it is the truth, and you do not have that clear mind where you can see the truth in order to accept it, she says that then it's not going to happen. And she says she won't say it's impossible because anything can happen, but, you know, it's not likely. Again, and I mean this with all of my heart, follow your heart. I would say if Elie Ruzdar can discourage you to the point that you walk away from this path and you do not look back, well, then that's fine. You know, then maybe the path wasn't for you. My guess is she can't discourage you to that point. She can, you know, that you can just listen to her words in a way that it reinforces any sense of inadequacy you have, but that it won't make you leave the path, because you do belong here and you want to be here. So what I'm saying is, do not let those words reinforce any sense of inadequacy that you're still holding on to. Don't do that. And she didn't mean for that to be what comes of her words. I think I asked her about that. I think we'll probably hear that in this interview. So give what you want to give. Give from the heart.
Although who you are, although the true nature is functioning in every single body, in everyone, and in other words, grace is for everyone. And if there's no 1% more than the other. If somebody wakes up, that doesn't mean that's more aware than the other. It's not like that.
Awareness,
existence is right here for everyone. Everyone has that. But just because you don't know who you are, that doesn't mean this is not functioning. It is functioning.
Yeah, and what she's saying now is, even if you don't know who you are and you aren't ready to know who you are, you still are who you are. So in that way, there is no loss in not being ready to discover it.
So if you are authentic to yourself and say, you know what, yes, I was always the object seeker. I was always seeking something in this world. I was always one looking for experiences. Then if I want peace, if I want happiness, if I want, peace of heart, there are so many ways. There are so many techniques. You can learn so many techniques of meditation, yoga.
Yeah, she is saying that there are things you can do that will bring a more lighthearted life to you that is not as focused as awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. You could take walks in nature. You could take a yoga class. And so if that feels more suited to you, go and do that. My recommendation would be that if you're even listening to this, that you probably are genuinely interested in something more direct, and that I would continue to give what you feel to give to the path of purification and to awareness, watching, awareness, meditation.
Walking in the nature, interacting with nice people and, awake people, or even some people who are very in tune with themselves. That helps you to just, improve this light, or try to promote the light within yourself. And see, one thing I said to someone that really hit home, I said, you know what, if you cannot be the awareness, the least you can do is be aware.
All right, so if if you are deciding, you know what, but the truth is, Regina, I don't want to practice awareness, watching awareness. I don't really want to do these course lessons anymore. You know, I guess I've been doing it because I thought I would get something out of it, and now, you know, I'm realizing that maybe I'm not going to get something out of it that I thought I would get, and I've got other things to do. Again, she would say, well, then, you know, go in peace, right? Go do what you feel called to do and enjoy it. But what she's also saying right now is, as you go and do it, whatever you're going to go and do, just try to be more aware. It reminds me of the Buddhist teaching of mindfulness. Practice mindfulness in whatever you go and do. Right? And that, I'm sure, is helping to prepare you for the day when you'll have a more intense interest. So go in peace, because you want to go. Again, always follow your own heart. You know, if you're realizing you don't want to be here, you don't want to be doing this, this feels like chore to you, right? Then go in peace and practice mindfulness in your everyday life. That's the recommendation, and I support that. If you don't want to be here, like I'm saying, follow your heart. So if it feels like, you know, you're doing something you don't really want to do. I think guilt can even make people do spiritual practice, because I think there's this belief in the mind, you know, again, that I'm bad, but I think that the spiritual mind can say I'm bad because I'm not awake. And so guilt can drive people to spiritual practice, which is different than the heart wanting the spiritual practice, right? So if you really feel this isn't for you, find what is for you now, but practice mindfulness. Isn't that sweet?
Be aware. It does the same result. It does pretty much the same. But if you're not aware, and seeking for the object, and not looking for the truth, then there is misery, of course. Of course. There's no question.
Yeah, and she's saying if you don't practice mindfulness, the effect will be misery, right? So the mindfulness is not only going to be helping to prepare you for awakening to yourself, but in a way it's a protection. Right? If you're being mindful of your thoughts, mindful of what you're doing, it's a protection from going all the way back into the illusion in a full way so that you experience misery or suffering, as we typically call it.
But if you just accept that and say, you know what, this is what I am, this is what I'm looking for, but I'm just going to be a little bit more aware. And when I say try to be more aware, yes, you have to try to be more aware with the mind, with the egoic mind. Ego, because ego is functioning in there. How else you can be aware? So, you have to use your egoic mind to be a little bit more aware, more conscious in your actions. And that's about it.
All right, I have one question.
Okay.
You used a word, and I suspect that your use of the word is different than mine has always been, so I want to see if I'm correct. You talked about contemplation as well as meditation. What I sensed, tell me if I'm correct or wrong, what I sensed is by contemplation, you are referring to during meditation, noticing that or this, and keeping attention there.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. What is here? What is truth? What is the truth? Who am I? And these are contemplation.
Yes.
During meditation you can do it, and also during your life you can do it constantly. Yes.
All right. So again, we went back to that contemplation point, and she's making it clear that contemplation and self-inquiry are the same thing. The probing, right? The probing, the going deeper within awareness. And she's saying, you know, definitely do it during meditation, but you can do it in your everyday life, too. You know, you can be looking to see, what am I? Who am I? And turning that attention back to the watcher in your everyday life. You know, I'm going to call that advanced mindfulness, right? You can practice advanced mindfulness.
You know, for example, I give you a very simple example. We do experiences every day, thousands of experiences, right?
Right.
But in the midst of any experience, especially the one that are tragic, especially those, that the awakening could happen. Could happen accidentally.
She says that when we are mindful, especially if we're practicing the advanced mindfulness, that awakening can actually happen at any time, you know, because we are focusing on the watcher, the awareness. We're keeping our attention there. So it can, that awakening, that recognizing who I am and accepting it, that decision, can happen at any time. And she says it especially can happen during tragedy. There's something in the tragedy that breaks down the ego so much that if we are ready, you know, we can step forward, see the truth, and embrace the truth in tragedy. But practicing mindfulness or the advanced mindfulness, the paying attention to the watcher all of the time, will help to create these, quote, accidental awakenings.
Because this life becomes so such a nightmare. That imagine that, you know, when sometimes you're asleep and you have a nightmare and you wake up all of a sudden in sweat and you say, oh my goodness, thank goodness this was a nightmare. It's the same thing in here. Because this play is a dream. You don't know that if you don't wake up. You see this as reality. This is as unreal as the time that you go to sleep at night. Exactly the other thing. Exactly. There's no difference.
She is just saying that this experience that we have that we call life in the world is as unreal as a nighttime dream. And she says exactly. And of course, it's awakening from it that leads us to see that truth.
But in the midst of these experiences, if you could capture yourself as who you are, you wake up. But the point is, a person who is aware can capture herself, not unaware.
Okay, so she says if you can catch yourself, meaning your true self, see who you are and claim it, you wake up. But only someone who is aware can catch themselves, not someone who is unaware. So again, the importance of practicing mindfulness or the advanced mindfulness, the paying attention to awareness or watching the watcher even throughout the day. Obviously not as deeply as you do when you sit down and close your eyes. Because when you're out in the world, you know, driving a car, you know, talking to people, there needs to be some attention outward. But even with some, you know, maybe even most attention outward, right? But even with most attention outward, there can be some attention, a bit of intention that kind of stays in and notices the watcher. In meditation, no attention needs to be outward. So in meditation, it's kind of like a dynamite within, right? You go within with everything you've got and you pay attention to awareness. But you can do it softly, with some attention remaining within, even in your daily life. And that is what she is recommending. And with that, it looks like I am out of time. So I hope you all enjoyed this, and I will be back next week to share more from the Ellie Ruzdahl interview. Bye.